from Wondery. This is Business Wars. I'm David Brown. Another day, another superhero battle, and next week we'll be back with a brand new series. There'll be fewer kapows and perhaps a little less spandex when we cross enemy lines to explore the battle between Univac and IBM. But what a terrific story. I mean, everyone knows IBM, right? But once upon a time, Univac was the electric brain that would change the world. And it did, even if not everyone remembers the name Univac. And I want to thank you all for listening to Marvel vs. DC. If you love this show, please leave us a review. And if you know someone who would love our program, tell them, won't you? And let them know that new episodes come out every Tuesday and Thursday so they don't even have to wait a week between episodes. Now let's get back to this program. We have two guests, and you are in for a real treat. Reed Tucker, the man behind the mask, he wrote all of our Marvel vs. DC episodes. Reed's here, as well as someone you may know from Kevin Smith's View Askewniverse. Jason Mewes, Jay from Jay and Silent Bob, is also on the program today, and I gotta say, this guy loves comics. We're thrilled to get to talk to Reed and Jay today, and you'll get to hear those conversations right after this. We're back, and I'm sitting down with Reed Tucker. Reed's a journalist living in New York City, and he's the author of the book Slugfest, Inside the Epic 50-Year Battle Between Marvel and DC. Reed wrote our series, and it's so much fun to get to talk with someone else who loves comic books. Well, I think he might like them even more than I do. Here's our conversation.
I'm Reed Tucker, and I wrote a book called Slugfest, Inside the Epic 50-Year Battle Between Marvel and DC.
Reed Tucker, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us on Business Wars.
Thanks a lot for having me, David. It's nice to be here.
Hey, tell me a little bit about your interest in comics in the first place. What was it that led you ultimately to write the book Slugfest?
Well, I think like most people who grew up in the 70s and 80s, superheroes were just kind of a part of my life. I had superhero toys and puzzles, and we watched them on TV, and I had underoos. Do you remember those where you could dress up sort of in underwear of a superhero?
Underoos.
Yeah, remember those?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's great. I'd forgotten about underoos.
Yeah,
sure.
Man. My brother and I had those. So superheroes were just kind of in our life. And I can remember even being back in, you know, the schoolyard and a child growing up and hearing about people talking about, well, they like DC better or they like Marvel better. And so I always had this idea that there was this kind of rift between fans. And so only now that I've grown up and I'm a newspaper reporter at the New York Post and I cover movies a lot, do I realize that this rift is still there. And not only is the rift still there, but that rift has moved into the billion-dollar world of movies. So now people are really invested in Marvel versus DC. And so that's kind of where I got the idea for the book.
So where do you come down personally, and then maybe we can pull back a little bit more. Are you more of a Marvel guy or more of a DC guy?
Well, that's the thing. You know, I'm not being political when I say this, that I did not really have a preference going in, and I certainly didn't have a preference when I was a child because I didn't really know that there was subtle differences between the two. You know, to me, Captain America from Marvel was the same as DC's Batman. You know, they were both heroes. They both wore costumes. It's really only as an adult and only researching this project that I realized that there's lots of differences between not only the companies, but the way they write the superheroes and sort of the storylines and all these other kind of aspects that escaped me when I was a child. But I think I come down probably on the Marvel side, especially when it comes to the films. I really enjoy the Marvel films and I really don't enjoy the DC films.
Well, you know, there is something to that, and I find this aspect of it really fascinating, because when you look at the films, it's hard to make a case that the DC films have universally been better than the Marvel films. You know, that's just really difficult, unless you're looking exclusively, I think, maybe at the Batman franchise, which has been, you know, a remarkable success story, but kind of a nuanced success story, too, on different levels. You know, it's a different character. But I have to say, when I was growing up, we did take camps. I mean, we did take sides. You know, it was like there were the Batman guys and there were the Spider-Man guys. And that meant that if you were a Batman guy,
that maybe you would even fight for Shazam, even though it was indefensible.
It's hard. It's hard to defend Shazam.
And you know what I'm saying? And then the Marvel guys, and I understand, by the way, that there's a new Shazam movie on the horizon. You know, this is the original Captain Marvel, ironically enough. And then we're talking about the Marvel superheroes. They had their own, you know, I don't know, not so great characters, but you almost, I don't know, I almost felt like I had to defend, you know, DC in a sense. Have you encountered that sort of, not animosity, that's taking it too far, but I don't know, that sort of rivalry maybe?
I have, and it still burns really brightly, which surprises me because, to me, if you enjoy one superhero, you probably enjoy all superheroes because, I mean, when you're talking about the wide world of things and the wide world of pop culture, superheroes are a very tiny niche within that. And for people to really section themselves off into tribes when it comes down to individual superheroes, I find a little bit strange. But yeah, I've encountered that. I mean, there are, I talked to comic book stores owners even now, you know, in 2018, where some of these hardcore comic book fans will only read books from Marvel or they'll only read books from DC.
And really?
some of the movie fans also are super diehard and they will say, you know, I only like Marvel films. I will never see the DC films or vice versa. And so it's just very tribal. But I think most people probably enjoy, you know, dipping into both worlds, which is the case for me.
I didn't realize that it would have become that tribal, but it certainly makes sense. I mean, certainly these days and everything. Do you have a favorite? Do you have a personal favorite superhero?
Well, I like Batman growing up. I think I realize now that, you know, I really like detective stories. You know, a mystery is introduced and then you get clues along the way. And so a lot of Batman stories, because he doesn't really have superpowers per se, were structured like classic detective stories. So I liked him a lot. And also he was kind of a little bit darker and he had a little bit more of a messed up personality than most of the DC superheroes who were kind of one note, squeaky clean. So Batman was my guy. Sounds like Batman was your guy too.
Yeah, he was. But as I look back on it, I know why Batman was my guy. It was in large part because of the 1966 TV series. And I think that probably is true for a lot of people of a certain generation.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was also, of course, as time went on, not just with the movies, but this echo that Batman was someone, I mean, he was orphaned, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he had to sort of pull himself up by his bootstraps, albeit with a lot of money. And he did make himself into something. He made himself into something super. You know, he didn't have superpowers per se, but with enough training and with enough persistence, you know, he could do something. And I wonder what that is that taps into the, I guess it's really the American psyche. You know, this idea that we need heroes, and people like Batman or Iron Man sort of fill some need that we seem to have. I wonder what that's about.
No, I agree with you exactly on Batman. I think that there's something aspirational about Batman where you can read his stories or see his TV show or watch his movie. And I think kids can think, hey, I can do that because he doesn't have superpowers. But to like Superman, to imagine yourself as, well, I'm an alien on another planet and I get rocketed to Earth and the sun gives me powers. I mean, there's a little bit of a distance there. I don't think anyone grows up thinking that they're going to be Superman one day. But Batman,
right,
as you say, all you need is a few billion dollars and we can all be Batman.
Sure, absolutely. You know, one of the interesting things about the story that you tell about how Marvel overtook DC is that, in a sense, Marvel was, as outrageous as it was also kind of being more real than DC Comics was being in the 1960s. I mean, do you think that's a fair assessment of what gave Marvel the edge and allowed it to kind of overtake DC in these comic wars?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous to think of that these stories were more grounded when they, you know, starred a man made out of orange rock or whatever. But the, you know, Marvel was trying to do something different, something more realistic, I guess. Richard Donner, who directed the Superman movies in the 70s, he called it verisimilitude, which is realism without being realistic. In other words, you ground the story in whatever world that you're setting it in. So I do think that was what Marvel was kind of after. DC stories are not set in our real world. You know, they're in fictional cities, Gotham City, or the Flash lives in Central City, whereas the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, they're right here in New York City, or, you know, they're taking place in our world. And if whoever's in the White House is also president in the Marvel universe. And so they try to take a lot of what's going on, you know, ripped from the headlines kind of stuff, and make their characters more grounded and realistic. And I think that's what gave them an edge in the 60s, especially because DC was kind of getting away from realistic stories, and we're doing much more kind of juvenile stories aimed at children. Batman turns into an ape or what have you.
Yeah. There's also a certain level of self-deprecation, I sense, among the Marvel characters. And this is true going 60s, 70s, even into the 80s, that you didn't really see from the DC characters. It was almost as if DC was trying to uphold this idea of the superhero as a fortress of goodness or virtue, whereas the Marvel characters had a whole lot more self-doubt or something going on.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly right. The DC heroes never really treated their powers as anything other than a gift that they were going to serve mankind with. And some of the Marvel heroes, when they got their powers, they treated it almost like a curse. The first heroes that came out from Marvel in 1961, the Fantastic Four, when they start transforming into these crazy heroes, you know, one transforms into a stretchable man, a woman's invisible, another one turns into a rock monster. I mean, they treat it like as we would in real world, you know, with horror, and they can't believe they have these powers and they don't want these powers. And it was the same thing with Spider-Man. You know, young Peter Parker did not necessarily want these powers. He had a lot of things going on in his life as a normal teenager would, and these powers complicated his life, and they didn't necessarily make his life better. And so that was really an interesting new idea that Marvel kind of popularized, that DC was not doing back then.
Over the years, there have been other companies that have tried to break into comics in a big way, you know, to become the next Marvel or DC, but they really have not succeeded for the most part. There have been a few, you know, interesting series and interesting companies that have emerged. But for the most part, this is a game that's all about DC and Marvel. Why do you think that is? Is it just the economics of the business?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I wondered that as well. And the only thing I can really come up with is it's just a legacy business. And even Marvel and DC over the years have tried to introduce new heroes. And for whatever reason, very few of them have stuck. And I think people just want what's familiar to them. You know, they want Batman and Superman and Spider-Man, and they're resistant to anything new. And there's also, I think, a merchandising angle to it. Kids all around the world know who Spider-Man is. You know, he's the number one merchandise character in the whole world. Everyone knows who Superman is and Batman is. And so I think there's sort of a pre-sold aspect to a lot of these characters that the new characters don't have. And so it's much more difficult for them to break through because they just don't have the awareness that Wonder Woman has or Superman.
You know, this gets me to something else. And it was something that came up when we were talking with Jason Mewes just a little bit ago. He said that he had turned his daughter on to a lot of his favorite characters. And it's almost as if this has been passed down from generation to generation, that it's not just about the comics. It's not even just about the movies. It's about parents turning their kids on to these superheroes, perhaps through the values, or maybe something else is going on here.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I don't know if you ever go to any of the Comic-Cons. There seems to be one in every city. There's probably a few in Texas there. But when I go to...
Oh, you know it.
Yeah, you dress up in a Batman costume. But one thing I always notice is that there are a lot of multi-generations, as you're talking about. There's a lot of fathers and sons and mothers and daughters, and they're kind of passing along what they love to their children. And comic books nowadays are so expensive, I don't know if these children can actually afford to read them, but they at least know what they are. So I do think there's that aspect to it, which I find pretty nice. And sometimes when I go see the films, I see a lot of, parents with their teenage kids seeing Iron Man or whatever it is at the cinema. So It's really nice that this gets passed down from one generation to the next.
I find it, though, a little bit curious that the culture of DC Comics, a little more buttoned down, I guess you could say, than Marvel, continued into the movies. And so what you see in DC movies, or movies starring DC characters, doesn't tend to be as freeform or as freewheeling or as, I don't know, over-the-top fun as a lot of the Marvel films. And I wonder what it is about the culture of these two companies that makes it so that, you know, they sort of crossed over from comic books into movies with that culture kind of oddly intact, if you know what I'm saying.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. I've noticed that too, and I think that's one of the things that maybe subconsciously puts audiences off the DC heroes is a lot of the DC heroes were created back in the late 1930s or early 1940s, and so they have a real old-fashioned sensibility to them. We were talking about it earlier. They don't have much of a very sophisticated personality. They're just kind of one-dimensional do-gooders. And so that yeah. is what DC as a company has been struggling with for literally decades is how to update these musty old characters for a contemporary audience. And they've tried several times in print, and now they're trying with films. And I, at least with the current crop of films, I don't think they've hit upon a way to make them resonate with modern day audiences. And so that's
Although, oddly enough, I would say that it seems like they've hit on something with Wonder Woman, and I don't know what that is. But Wonder Woman never did resonate, with, at least with me, as a comic book character. But on the big screen, the new Wonder Woman with Gal Gadot is, I think, 5-star, first class, stuff, great stuff. And I don't know what that is, but I sort of wish DC could figure out how to bottle that and make it happen, if only for the sake of the rivalry with Marvel.
You know what I mean? Yeah, to give them a fighting chance, you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. A lot of people seem to like Wonder Woman. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that it was not directed by Zack Snyder, who handled most of the other DC films, and it had a little bit more of a lightness of touch than Batman versus Superman or Man of Steel. So I think people liked it in that way. But I still think, you know, I was lukewarm on it, honestly. I still think if you come away and you ask someone, describe to me who Wonder Woman is, I think they'd say, well, she's strong and she's a good fighter. But it, as far as describing three-dimensional personality traits of who this person is, I still don't know who Wonder Woman is. And I don't know if that, that movie necessarily gave her a relatable personality. But yeah, I agree. It was much better than the regular DC movies. But for me, it was missing a little bit of a something. But you know, I realize I'm in the minority
on that. Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, you touched on this when you talked about how, like, going back quite a ways, when Jack Kirby, who was one of the greats of Marvel, worked hand in hand with Stan Lee back in the 60s, he jumps ship and goes to DC. And you would expect that DC could capitalize on this and maybe, I don't know, make some of DC's characters cooler. It didn't work out that way. Right, it just didn't come off. It didn't work. So what I can't figure on the one hand, I sort of think, I wonder if DC might want to poach more people from Marvel, you know, just to update the characters or update the movies or whatever. But that doesn't seem to work, and it hasn't historically worked. And that seems to me to be a real curiosity.
Yeah, it's a funny story that, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, is that DC has this real buttoned-up culture, especially, you know, back a few decades ago. And when they poached Jack Kirby in 1970, they were very corporate and still very conservative. And there's a famous story of Jack Kirby came over and, you know, they hired him to do his Jack Kirby thing. But in the end, that proved to be a little too far out there for them. So in some of the stories, yeah. he was drawing Superman, but he drew it in his very distinctive Jack Kirby style, which is a little boxier, a little rougher. And so they actually had their own in-house DC artist go back behind Jack Kirby and redraw Superman's face so it looked more on model. So it's like, you know, they hire what the great from Marvel, but then they get a little bit scared when he brings that full Marvel package to them. So yeah, that didn't work out when he came there. Actually DC in the comic book world, at least, they just poached who's arguably Marvel's biggest writer, this guy named Brian Michael Bendis, who created Jessica Jones, which is a Netflix series. You know, he's a great writer. And so that was their biggest theft in a long, long time. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does at DC if he brings some of that Marvel sensibility over that way.
So right now, I mean, if you were to say who's winning in the wars, my sense of it is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Marvel is ahead of DC when it comes to just mass appeal, sales of comics. Is that right?
That is right, yes. Marvel took the lead for the first time from DC, at least in print comics, in 1972. And since then, aside from a few months here and there, as best we can tell, Marvel has been ahead of DC. So that's decades that they've been in the lead. And certainly when it comes to movies, I don't think there's anyone who can argue that Marvel is not pretty far ahead, at least currently, than where DC is.
So having said that, though, you look at the DC stable of characters, and they're really remarkable. I mean, you know, there's no denying Batman or Superman or The Flash or Green Lantern or Green Arrow, and they go on and on and on. You know, Wonder Woman we've been talking about. And so I wonder if there's any way for, at this point, DC to catch up, or if it's just we're talking about two different things. We're talking about oil and vinegar. We're talking about two different sort of elements in this comic book universe. And DC will always be relegated to number two, and Marvel will always be number one. Or no? I mean, what do you think?
No, I think that's a good point. I think forever is a pretty long time, and I think these characters are probably going to be around forever. And what I think DC, what they were trying to do was match Marvel's strategy, and Marvel was building this unified universe where all the characters lived in this one world and one movie led into the next. And, you know, Marvel's doing it really, really well. Now they're, you know, with Black Panther, they're 18 movies in, and there hasn't been really a single bomb in 18 movies, which, as you know, from Hollywood is an incredible, incredible streak. And so DC tried to match that first with the Man of Steel and then Batman versus Superman and Wonder Woman. And then last year with the Justice League. And once the Justice League fizzled, I think there was some executive reshuffling over there. And I think they're probably, for the most part, going to give up on that idea of this unified DC universe in film. And what they're going to do moving forward is probably let directors have more distinctive voices, let them have their own crack at a character. So you might see, you know, a really dark take on Batman, and then Wonder Woman 2 might come out and it might be a completely different tone. And so I think that's really what they need to do, because the template that director Zack Snyder established with Batman versus Superman and Man of Steel, I think people have pretty much rejected at this point, and they just need to branch out and just take each character where it leads them. So we'll see. I mean, if they came out with a really great Batman movie, I think they would do really well, because no one's, you know, you have to see that if that comes out, or a really great Superman movie. So yeah, we'll see.
I mean, what you're saying is it sounds totally logical. I mean, we've seen a little bit of this in Batman, where you've seen directors take a different tone, a different approach toward the central character, and it gives each director sort of puts a new spin on that character, which attracts more, you know, it attracts a different demographic, it attracts different audiences, and maybe broadens that whole base for Batman as a character. And maybe that's what DC needs to do more of across the board with all of its characters, rather than trying to just lump them all in one movie, like, as you were saying, like Justice League.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they would be smart to do that, because, you know, as you're saying, it behooves them to have multiple iterations of a character. So if you like Batman, you can commune with Batman through, you know, buying the DVDs of the Batman 1966 TV series, which is kind of goofy.
Sure.
Or you could watch him in Lego Batman, which is kind of, he's a snarky Batman. Or you could, the Christopher Nolan Batman is a little darker, or the new Batman. You know, there's all sorts of ways. And so they kind of cover their bases in that way, as opposed to just saying, well, you know, here he is, he's Ben Affleck, he's kind of a grunty Batman, and if you don't like him, then there's no Batman for you. So I think they do need to branch out, and they seem to be doing that, which I think is smart.
Okay, Reed, let me ask you just a crazy question, and you've been awfully generous with your time and generous sharing your story, too, for this series. We really do appreciate it. But I have to ask, if someone were to land from some other planet on, you know, on Earth and say, hey, Reed, who's the superhero? I mean, you know, of superheroes. Who would you say? I mean, who is the penultimate, or not penultimate, that means the second, but the ultimate superhero in your mind?
I think it's got to be Superman, because Superman.
There
was,
we go.
Yeah,
you think
Superman has gotten short shrift? Is that what you're saying?
Well, here's the deal. You say Superman, I would say Superman, and yet Superman, which is a DC character, as most of our listeners know, he's not number one by any measure, and yet he's the iconic superhero. I don't get that. I mean. If you were to look at sales, if you were to look at movies, if you were to look at, you know, you'd have to say it was Spider-Man or maybe Black Panther now in the wake of the movie. But we don't just run to Spider-Man or Black Panther. We still run to that iconic 1936. What was it? 36, 39? I don't remember.
38, yeah.
When Superman was created, that's still the guy. And that strikes me as remarkable that after all of these wars between DC and Marvel, with Marvel pulling out ahead and maintaining that lead since 72, we're still stuck on Superman as the guy. That's remarkable to me.
I agree, but I think that's because maybe we know the history and we know that he was the first, at least in America, and so maybe that sort of sways us a little bit, but it's funny, if you go back and read the original Superman stories from the 30s, he was not this superpowered godlike being. You know, his powers were much more limited, and only over the years that they keep adding more and more powers and making him stronger and all that, that I think he kind of got away from it. And nowadays, it's really hard to tell a story about this omnipotent being. And I think that's one of the problems that they have, and probably some of the viewers have with him, is there's very few interesting stories to tell with somebody who can't be harmed.
Mm-hmm. There has to be a flaw. There has to be that certain humanity that we can relate to.
Right. Which I think they did a pretty good job in the 70s movies, the Superman, the Donner 70s movies. But nowadays, no.
So what's the takeaway? I mean, as you pull back and you think about this story that you've managed to pull together about this epic battle between DC and Marvel, what's the lesson to be learned that might, I don't know, transcend even comic books from what happened between DC and Marvel? What do you think it might be?
Well, I guess for me, the most astonishing thing is if you wait long enough, pretty much everything, it's going to come around, because, you know, I don't know if you remember, you know, as I said, growing up in the 70s and 80s, superheroes and comic books were incredibly marginalized. You know, they were not mainstream at all. And a lot of times, if you wanted to go buy comic books, you had to go to a comic book specialty store, because they started falling off the newsstands and off these drugstore spinner racks, you know, in the 70s and certainly by the 80s. And so you had to go to the specialty store, which was usually located in like the bad part of town at the end of the strip mall. You go in there, there were no windows. It was, a dusty place run by a grumpy guy in a hoodie sweatshirt. And for that to now be beyond mainstream, to me, is just astonishing. I can't believe how far these characters have come. I love seeing that everyone knows who these characters are. They get, you know, these billion-dollar global movie franchises. They're all over TV. They're all over Netflix. There's merchandising in the billions. I just find that incredible. And I really enjoy that. I never thought as a child liking these characters that this would ever happen. So it's great.
Reed Tucker, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us. We sure do appreciate it. That was a lot of fun. I've enjoyed exploring this battle between DC and Marvel, and you've really brought it to life for us. Thanks.
No, thanks a lot for having me on, David. I enjoyed telling the story.
We're back, and now it's time to sit down with someone who is an icon himself. And he loves talking about some of his favorite heroes, superheroes, that is. You know his face from Clerks, Chasing Amy, and Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Jason Mewes joins us now to talk about his love of comics. And I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. Here it is.
This is the Gator from The Gator and the Lunatic. No, I'm just kidding. This is Jason... Hey, what's up? It's Jay Muse saying snooch to the nooch. You know, I don't know. People call me Muse, and I am from Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, Clerks, Mallrats. You might know me from that. You might know me from Jay and Silent Bob Get All the Podcast. You might know me from J-A-Y Muse, Jay Muse on all the social media things. And now I just started 2 days ago, Sunday the 1st. I am a Facebook gaming. I've been streaming on Facebook exclusively, and it's been fun, man. It's been a lot of fun. So I'm a professional gamer, if you will.
That's awesome. Jason, I'm embarrassed to say this, dude, but it's like, you know, I'm a little starstruck because, you know, obviously I watch Clerks and Mallrats and all the great movies that you were part of. And I mean, when you're on the street, do people recognize you and say, hey, it's Jason Mewes? I mean, do you still get a lot of that?
I would say not a whole lot, but sometimes. Like today I actually got that, and I was shocked because it was just some kid walking down the street, and I actually was going to my daughter's school to bring cupcakes and stuff for her birthday. Anyway, as I was walking across the street, he like stopped, stared at me, kept walking, turned around and was like, are you Jay Muse? But I would say I get that maybe twice a week, three times a week. Not that much. But when I'm with Kevin, of course, it's automatic nonstop because everyone notices Kevin and me. But I would say I still get it a couple times a week. I just went into a gas station before I got in here to grab a drink, and the guy behind the counter recognized. So again, it depends, but I don't feel like I'm super recognizable because my hair is usually up in a bun. I don't have my hair down with a beanie or whatever, but a couple days a week.
Now, do you still have the long hair and the whole deal?
I do. I'm letting it grow because if all goes as planned, Kevin wrote a new script, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. And we're hoping to start pre-production in the next couple weeks and start shooting, you know, the first week of May, middle of May. It's just about getting all the ducks in a row.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that
I'm really
is
excited.
Really great to hear.
I'm really excited. The script's super, super funny. It'll be a lot of fun because there'll be a lot of cameos. Like the way the script's set up and the storyline, there'll be a lot of cameos from all the other movies. You know, Jason Lee, Joey Lauren Adams, and Brian O'Halloran, and all that type of stuff. So, again, I think it'll be a lot of fun shooting it. I think the movie in a whole will be funny and great. Because it's a funny script and movie, but I personally, selfishly, I feel like just shooting in the process of it will be a blast. So I'm really hoping we get to do that. So
you mentioned your 3-year old daughter Logan. Is it true that you named her after the Marvel character Wolverine?
It is true. Yeah, you know For years, the wife and I talked about when we were going to be ready to have a child. And for some reason in my head, I really thought I was going to have a boy. Like I was like, we're going to have a boy no matter what. And I really believe that, which so much so that we never came up with a girl's name. We never picked a girl's name. We just picked a boy's name. And we were like, I was like, I want to name him. First, we thought maybe Jarrell. Kal-El, and then we know that there was a couple of people who already called their sons Kal-El, and my wife's like, no way. And I was like, you know what? My favorite character is Logan. I would like to name him Logan. And my wife's like, that's a really cool name. And my wife's not so much into the character as much as I am, but she liked the name in general. So it was picked out of, I was looking for a comic book name. I picked my favorite character, which was Logan Weapon X. But then when we had a girl, you know, we actually didn't come up with a name, and luckily I didn't think the wife was going to go for it, but the wife was like, look, we never thought of a girl's name because we really thought we were going to have a boy. So, but Logan works for a girl. So yeah, she let me, so I was really excited because, I didn't think she was going to go for it.
So let me ask you something then. I mean, because Wolverine is from the Marvel universe, right? And
yes.
So I guess this is something that you get asked all the time, and anybody who loves comics gets asked all the time. DC or Marvel?
It's a tough one. I feel like for me, it's definitely it's honestly equal because for me, there's so many. Wolverine's one of my favorite characters since I started reading. About 13 years old is when I started reading comic books and really getting into comics. And Wolverine was always one of my favorites. But I am definitely one of my favorite cartoons and one of my favorite books down the line was the JLA, Justice League of America. I just love the whole series of books they came out with. But again, a huge fan of X-Men and Wolverine, but a big fan of Justice League comic books. And then they came out with the Justice League animated series, which was amazing. And then there's just, again, there was all that. And then now years and years later, I mean, the Marvel's Netflix original Marvel's shows, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Defenders and Daredevil blow me away. Like, they're so great, the shows. And I'm such a huge fan as well of the, you know, CW DC shows, Supergirl, Flash,
DC absolutely. Legends. Those are so good.
They are. They're all so good. And it's so amazing to see for me the TV shows and movies that they've been able to come out with. Because even back in the day, they had a, you know, they had David Duchovny, not David Duchovny, sorry, David Hasselhoff as Nick Fury. They had Dolph Lundgren as the Punisher. And those movies, you know, they weren't great. They weren't great. But for me back then, it was like, oh my gosh, comic book movies. And then they had the, of course, Incredible Hulk show. And then they had like the crossover with Thor and Daredevil, which was so bad. Like Thor looked, you know what I'm saying? But it was still so exciting when you watched it. You're like, oh my gosh, they have Daredevil is Matt Murdock is in TV show right now. It was amazing. It's amazing. So again, as poorly as the production was, it was still so exciting. And now it's like you add that with the production value and it's, I don't know. It's very exciting.
Let me tell you something. This is a thing that really has torn me apart because, like, when I grew up watching the 1966 Batman TV series. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love that stuff. And I can remember, like, my parents laughing about it, and I didn't get why they were laughing, you know? It was like, dude, this is Batman. He's like fighting crime. Why are you guys laughing, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And nowadays, it's like when people talk about DC versus Marvel, you know, I also love Spider-Man, you know, and I grew up on the Spider-Man, you know, the animated TV series, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I hate to kind of pick between the two because they both are almost, I don't want to say religion, but they're sort of like that. I mean, in that there's this idea that, you know, good triumphs over evil. And these guys, like, were talking the talk and they really believed in what they believed in. And I mean, it's meant something to me. What was the attraction? What was the appeal to you, these you know, comic book heroes? What was it that got under your skin about these guys?
You know, I feel like back in the day, it's like when I would sit and read the books, or like you said, watch the Batman, the Spider-Man. There was the live action Spider-Man show as well, and then, you know, the Incredible Hulk, and then the of course Spider-Man and his amazing friends. And Stan Lee, it's like, I was telling someone the other day, it's like, I've known Stan the first time, and I don't mean to jump ahead, but really quick, Stan, 20 years ago, I think it was, I got to meet him in person, meet my hero, amazing person. And 20 years later, I still see him here and there at different conventions. Every time, still 20 years later, I hear him talk and I get goosebumps, literally get goosebumps. And have like a flashback of my childhood because he was the voice in Spider-Man and his amazing friends. He was like, hey, Spidey friend, you know, like, and it literally brings me back. And I don't know. I just think it, to me, it was like an escape. And I really felt like I would honestly get to, like, I feel like I would zone out and get like transported into this world of like superheroes and like you say, good versus evil. But besides that, it was so cool. And even for me, I remember back then people were like, you read comics, that's kids stuff. And honestly, I feel like it was a big help for me learning to read and honestly learning some words. Like in comics, there's some big words. And again, maybe they're not as big now, but when I was a kid, if Spider-Man was like, that building's very ostentatious, Like, I'd be like, what's this word mean? You know what I mean? Like, I would honestly learn, like, bigger words because of reading comics, and I would tell other people that, kids that, who didn't read comics, I'd be like, no, it's not for kids. Like, it is for kids, but it's also for adults. Like, but I definitely think, like you said, watching the show, like, it would definitely be like an escape. Like, feel like I'd be, you know, you get to dream and be like, wow, if only that was possible. If only there was people like that. If only there was a kid that got bit by a spider and could hang on the walls and stuff.
No, I mean, were you more into like the TV series and the movies and that sort of thing? Or were you like hooked on the comics themselves?
Oh, I mean, I feel equally, but maybe more so the comics in the beginning, because for me, it was easier, like going, just the whole process. For one, I would literally read comic after comic. I wouldn't walk to the store. If I had to go to the store for my grandma, I would bring, and it was nighttime, I bought this headlight, like a little strap that went around my dome, my head. And, you know, like the miners use them. You see them like miners or construction workers. And I would use that light and I would sit and walk to the store reading a comic. And I couldn't walk anywhere. I could, but I didn't want to walk anywhere unless I was reading a comic. So I'd bring a backpack filled with comics and I'd walk, you know, 10, 15 blocks, get groceries, walk back. But I'd be reading comics the whole time. And then the process of going to the comic book store each week, how exciting it was, like the excitement of like, oh my gosh, tomorrow's Wednesday, the new comic books are going to be out and we're going to get to go to a comic book store and we're going to get to see all the new stuff. And it was exciting. And again, TV wasn't for me back when I started reading. It's like there weren't cell phones. Well, there were, but there was the big box ones and, you know, that you had to carry with a strap and they were like really big and expensive. Only people with lots of money had them. But regardless, I had no phone. There was no cell phones. There wasn't really cable. I definitely didn't have cable. I remember a couple of my friends had cable, and it was the little white box on the top of the TV with the little dial you slid to the right, you know? So there wasn't a whole lot of channels and TV to watch and nothing portable. Not like now where it's like the difference now is if I go to the store and I walk with my iPad and I'll watch, you know, Batman and Robin and stuff like that. So that's the difference. But yeah, I used to love walking and going to the comic book store every Wednesday. And then every once in a while in New York, they'd have a comic book convention. And it's so funny to see now because, like I said, I travel around like I'm doing New York Comic Con this week. And, you know, there's even the smaller Comic Cons are still 10,000 people or so. Back then, it's like it would be in the basement of a New York, like a church in New York, and there'd be like maybe 15 vendors and like maybe, you know, 1,000 people would show up. But back then it was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing and huge. There's vendors from all over the place.
Is it true that like you and Kevin Smith like first kind of connected over comic books? Is that true?
It is because Kevin... First off, Kevin and Walter and Brian, if anyone watches Comic Book Men out there, Walter Flanagan runs our comic book store in Jersey. We still have Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash. Walter's been into comics the longest and got Kevin in the comics and Brian Johnson in the comics. And then the three of them got me in the comics because they used to work at this community center in my town. And after school, I would go there and wait for my grandma, for my grandma to get home from work, my mom, whoever I live with. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. But anyway, I'd go there and hang out, and that's where a bunch of my friends would meet. There was foosball and pool tables and board games, and that's where a lot of kids would go after school until their parents got home from work. And Kevin, Brian, and Walter worked there, and they would sit in the corner and read comics. And I'd always go over and be like, hey, man, what are you guys doing? I need this. Can you get the board game, you know, Twister? Can you get this? And they'd be like, don't get out of here, kid. Don't bother me. And I'd be like, what are you guys doing? And finally, for me to leave them alone, they started being like, here, this is what we're doing. They give me their old ripped, like a corner would be ripped or an old comic book they didn't like that they bought. And they started giving me their old comic books. And I would read through all of them and I liked everything they gave me. And they laugh about it still to this day. Kevin, you know, will tell stories about how he'd always be like, what'd you think of that book? And I'd be like, I loved it. And he would say it was so weird because no matter what book it was, I liked it. And they always made fun of me about that. But that's sort of what got me talking to Kevin and knowing Kevin. But where we really sort of started hanging out is they were going to New York, Brian, Walt, and Kevin. And I was sort of more friends with Brian, and I knew Brian through my older brother. So Brian, but Kevin was like, this kid's underage. I don't want him coming to New York. He's not crossing state line with us. Yeah, so Brian Johnson's like, well, I'm driving, so you have no say in it. So I got to go to New York. You know, it's like an hour and a half ride from Jersey where we grew up. And so the whole way there, like, you know, we laughed and joked, and that's sort of when I started hanging with Kevin. And then I started, because we dropped him off at his house, even though he lived a block from me, I didn't know where he lived, but I sort of knew of where he lived. But because we dropped him off, I started going to his house. And again, he laughs about it and says he remembers. And it's cool. They make there's a movie called Shooting Clerks, that these kids made a biopic of Kevin, of when he's worked at it's like people playing Jay, some muse, Kevin Smith. And when Kevin Smith worked at the convenience store and came up with Clerks. And anyway, in that story, because we've talked about this, is the Jay, the kid that plays Jason Mewes, goes and knocks on Kevin Smith's door. And Kevin's like, you're not my friend. What are you doing here? And I'm like, what are we doing today, bro? You want to go look at comic books? And I actually started doing that. Like, I was like 13, 14. And he was like 18. And he's like, dude, you're not my friend. But I'd be like, yeah, but what do you want to do today? And he'd be like, all right, come on, let's take a ride up to Red Bank where the comic book store is. Not ours, but another store. Anyway, but yeah, so it was through comic books that sort of Kevin and I started hanging out and talking and bonding over. So
So you and Kevin have both known Stan Lee, the Marvel publisher and the mastermind, for, I guess it's what, been over a couple of decades now. Ever since he had a cameo in Mallrats back in, what was that, 1995 or 1996, yeah, something 90, like that?
I think it was 95 we shot it, and maybe came out 96. But I don't quote me on that. But yes, it was definitely around 95.
So you're directing your first film, Madness in the Method. And I understand you were able to get Stan Lee to actually cameo again.
I did.
Is that right?
It did, and it was very, very nice of him. I was very, very excited. He comes and he does a cameo. It was so sweet. It's like, again, still, I've known him 20 years. We met him on the set of Mallrats, and I got to hear and listen to Kevin and him talk, and you know, get to ask him a bunch of questions. Like, again, the questions Jason Lee asks him in the movie is like silly questions I would joke around and ask Kevin and them when I was 13, be like, who would win in a fight, the Hulk or Thing? And they'd be like, we don't know, dude, you know, and they would bust my chops. But so anyway, so we got to meet Stan there, which was like a dream come true. And then over the years, we'd see him at comic book conventions, or we got to see him at different places and different events that we got to do. We'd see him. But yeah, and now 20 years later, almost 20 years, maybe a little more, I get to direct my own movie, and I'm like, I have to have Stan in it, but I wonder if he'll do it. And I called him up, and he said, look, I'll do it, but it has to be today, and it has to be in the next 2 hours. Like, we weren't supposed to start shooting till like 3 o'clock. But again, it was really, really sweet, because everyone that worked on my movie was all very nice. They all did the movie that we didn't have a lot of money, of course. They did it because they said they wanted to be part of my first directing debut and all that. And so everyone was not supposed to work till like 3 o'clock, like 5 o'clock, and got everything together and got to set by 3, because Stan had a window from 3 to 5. And it was really sweet because, A, that he came at all, but also it's like it was sweet to me that his person that helps, like his assistant, was like, look, he has to be home by 6 because he always has dinner at 6 on the button with his wife. And I don't know, I thought that was the sweetest thing, that, you know, he's 90 something, and his wife was too. And how sweet that they still have dinner at 6 o'clock every night together. I don't know. I thought that was super, super sweet.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I mean, You know, it would have given me sort of chills. I mean, to get a chance to work with Stan Lee. I've got this enormous, giant-sized Spider-Man that's got his signature on it that I grabbed at a comic book convention when he was there, you know, talking and everything.
Yes.
But the chance to actually get to work with someone like Stan Lee, what was that like for you?
It was amazing. Again, just every time I talk to him, it gives me goosebumps, and it really does, and it brings me back to when I was a kid, and he's such a very sweet, and he's sharp and funny, and it was a dream come true that I ever got to meet him, but then the work with him is just, again, just added to that. But at the same time, I was nervous because, again, you know, it's my first time directing, and you know, he's there and he's doing me a favor, and I'm honored that he's even on set. And I'm like, oh gosh, we don't make him, you know, let's not make him stand too long. Let's not, because, you know, sometimes like a light won't be set right. Yeah. And they'll be like, hey, it's going to be right. A few minutes to set a light. And I'd be like, no, we just got to do it. Super nervous. Again, as much as I know him, it made me nervous. But at the same time, I was honored, and it's awesome. He's really, again, he's super sweet and great guy, and I really feel it's surreal that I've got to get to work with him, let alone direct him and meet him at all. Because again, I've been reading comic books and such since I was like 13. So, you know, and it's sweet. I have a book as well at home, and when we told him that we named our daughter after a Marvel character. He wrote, you know, like, welcome to my world, Stan Lee to Logan. It was super sweet. So we have a comic book for her when she gets old enough, you know, it'll be sweet that she'll understand, like, wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people who don't get comics don't understand just how much we love not just the characters, but the people who are responsible for creating them and for bringing them to life. I mean, you know, Adam West is just recently passed away, and I got him to sign a book to my son, you know, because Batman meant so much to me, and it's kind of like passing this down. Does your daughter is she into comic books too, or not so much?
No, she is. It was awesome. She actually, for her birthday, lots of things she got, but also this morning she woke up, and while I make her breakfast, like if I don't... she plays with her toys usually in the morning, but sometimes she wants me to hold her, and I'm like, I have to cook you sausage. I don't want you by the stove. So I sometimes let her get a little TV time, and she put on herself the DCU Superhero Girls. So she loves that DCU has they have this whole series, a couple movies, and they have action figures and these 12-inch dolls, and that's what she got for Christmas. She loves Wonder Woman, Poison Ivy. She has Starfire and Katana, Batgirl. She knows all their names, and she loves taking their shoes off and putting their shoes on the other characters. And she has the Invisible Jet, Wonder Woman's Invisible Jet. They actually have that for these, and they have the DCU bus that four characters can go in, and it opens up, and it's a command center. And these are and she loves it. So yeah, she's into the DCU Superhero Girls, and she loves Spider-Man. For some reason, she loves the Spider-Man movie. It's one of the only movies that she'll sit and watch most of it.
Is this the latest Spider-Man movie or the first one?
It's the one with Doc Ock. It's the one with Doc Ock. She for some reason she likes that one. Yeah, it's so interesting because I'll try to put other Spider-Man movies on or other movies. And she won't sit, but there's something about that one she likes. So she'll sit through most of that, and she likes the Spider-Man animated series. I'll throw that on for her. But again, the DCU Superhero Girls, she really digs. And I'm psyched because, again, she knows all of them, and she'll be like, Wonder Woman! She loves to do that, so it's really cute.
Yeah. Hey, you know, when it comes to the Marvel movies, it seems like there's this public perception that Marvel may be doing a better job at sort of building out its universe on the big screen. And I don't know, box office records. I mean, you look at Black Panther, and that's become like one of the highest grossing superhero movies of all time. I mean, how do you feel about the Marvel movies versus the DC movies? What do you think about that?
I mean, I definitely, I enjoy both again, and I'm a tough I feel like I'm not tough because I like them all regardless. So it's like when people ask me, I don't think there's any of these movies that I haven't enjoyed or been entertained, if you will. I don't think they're all done perfect and great or whatever as some of the other, like some of them, like the Iron Man movie is like almost flawless, I feel like. You know, it's like they did such a great job with that and they picked such a great, perfect person. Robert Downey Jr. is so perfect. Yeah, so it's just like, you know, but like the first Hulk movie, you know, I feel like the Hulk itself, it wasn't that great, but I still was super entertained and was so stoked they were making a Hulk movie. You know, and then they've made another one, and same with the Spider-Man movies, they keep rebooting them. So the Batman movies I think are all great. Who's doing better? I mean, I don't know, it's tough. I feel like, yes, I guess maybe I would lean a little more towards the Marvel movies because excuse me, I think it's genius that they put out all the single movies out first, and it all led up to these little credits, and then a little sneak peek of something, credits, another little sneak peek, and it all added up to this Avengers movie, you know, and right, now the Avengers Infinity War is coming. It's just, I think it was genius, and I think they're done really well. But I think the DC, I really enjoy the DC movies as well. The Batman movies are great. And I haven't seen, believe it or not, I haven't seen Black Panther. I'm bummed. Not in theaters. I mean, I will definitely see it as soon as I can, but it's tough getting out for date night these days. With
sure.
I've heard only good things about Black Panther, and I know it's going to be good again. I wasn't even worried about not liking it, but I definitely think the Justice League is one of the movies I feel like for years I would, if someone had asked what's a movie you'd want to see from comic books, again, Justice League, JLA books are one of my favorite comic book series and the run that they've had and all that. And so I was so excited that they were putting together Justice League movie and, you know, the build up to that. I enjoyed it very much. I wouldn't say it was a perfect movie, but I definitely enjoyed it. Cause again, it's awesome to see, Aquaman and Cyborg and Wonder Woman, the whole lot of them together and stuff. So it's so fun
to see the evolution of some of these characters, yes, like Aquaman, right? I mean, you know, now he's almost like a Thor kind of character, right? I mean, with the long hair, and he's this godlike figure. And back in the day, I can remember when Aquaman was kind of, you know, I don't know, sort of skinny, short-haired kind of, you know.
Yeah,
I don't
totally.
Know, I don't know how to describe him. He's just a completely different character than he is, you know, in the movie.
He's that dude. What a great, that guy. He's another, I got to meet him recently, and I have to admit he's one of the only people I've run into at a Comic-Con and said hi to and talked to that literally, like, I, like, got a little starstruck and, like, lost wind because I love Game of Thrones, and I think he's such a great, you know, him as the, like, I love the scene when he's at the fire pit and he's saying, I don't know if there's cussing on this, I'm assuming not, but he's like, and he's, oh, it's so amazing, it gives me goosebumps right before he gives the brother the golden crown. He's like, you want your gold crown, here it is. But right before that, he's going in a circle and he's saying stuff. Oh, it's amazing. So anyway, I got to meet him, and what a nice guy and so nice. But again, I was like lost my breath. I little shame to admit that, but I really like lost breath. I was like, hi, nice to meet you, bro. And again, at these cons, I honestly meet a lot of really cool people that I enjoy. But
see, a lot of people are feeling that way when they meet you too. It's like, oh my God, it's Jason Mewes. Oh, I'm going to catch my breath.
You.
You know, I mean, seriously. I mean, let me, you've been awfully generous with your time, Jason, but let me ask you something, just sort of a wild card here. And I think it's something that whenever we're talking about DC and Marvel, it comes up, and it's sort of like, well, so what would your fantasy be? Would it be like, I don't know, Spider-Man and Superman get together and fight, you know, some common shared enemy? Or would it be more like Spider-Man and Superman against each other? Or maybe, I don't know, some kind of Is it a pair up or a match up or I mean, have you ever given any thought to
Ooh, so you're saying if I can pick kind of... like a whole, I think it would be really cool to see like the Justice League that they have now, same characters versus Suicide Squad. So it'd be awesome if they did a crossover where like Suicide Squad went rogue and started trying to conquer New York City, and Justice League had to come stop them, and there was a full out battle stuff. That would be cool.
Yeah, that I'm totally there. See, I've always wanted to see Batman versus Iron Man, because they're both guys who don't have superpowers per se. They're both rich dudes. They both got like sort of a dark past or whatever. You know, they're brooding. You know, I just kind of thought that would be like a great sort of, I don't know whether it would be a battle or between the two or a pair up. You know, I don't know.
No, I feel you. And they both got toys because the money, they got a bunch of cool toys. Yeah, definitely. And they're both pretty smart. Both have detective skills. Well, I don't know if Tony has detective skills like Batman, but they seem to be both pretty smart. So it would be a cool fight or team up.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Jason, look, when is your movie coming out? When can we tell people?
You know
people
what?
That...
So it's in the final final end of like sound and a couple little bits and bobs of CGI and stuff that need to be put in there. There's nothing anything crazy with the CGI, but there's a little bit left to do, and we're not sure. You know, we're not sure if we want to like try to tour with it like Kevin did with Red State. Do we want to just try to get it to some to like a Netflix or something, or do we want to try to sell it and get it in theaters? Again, I'm leaving it up to the professionals to see what the best plan will be, but there still is a little more fine tuning. We still got to get the score and music together 100%. There's a couple other little things that need to be fine tuned with the editing and all that. But again, I'm hoping to have a screening, or at least get people to see it by like June. So hopefully by June, summer, I'll be able to tweet Facebook and all that good stuff about like, hey, it's going to be showing here on this day or whatever. So
that's exciting. That's so exciting. Jason, I got to tell you, it's been a real honor and a privilege to get a chance to say hello to you and talk about comic books, which obviously a huge passion for you. Thanks so much for taking time
Thank
to talk
you.
To Business Wars. We appreciate it, man.
Thank you, man. You have a good day.
And that's a wrap on our superhero saga. Now, if you liked our conversations with Reed and Jason, follow them on social media. You can pick up a copy of Reed's book, Slugfest, inside the epic 50-year battle between Marvel and DC, wherever books are sold. And of course, you can hear Jason every week on his podcast with Kevin Smith, Jay and Silent Bob Get Old. Next time on Business Wars, we're going to be back with some hardware. Serious stuff. We're talking about Univac versus IBM. Univac, you know IBM, right? But Univac, that was the first major mainframe computer, or of course we call them mainframes these days. New episodes of Business Wars come out every Tuesday and Thursday, and you can catch up with our first few wars wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. And if you're listening on a smartphone, just tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast. You'll find episode notes, including some details you may have missed. You'll also find some offers from our sponsors, and we hope you'll support our show by supporting them. And thank you. Business Wars is hosted by yours truly, David Brown. This episode is produced by Karen Lowe. Executive producers are Hernan Lopez and Marshall Louie for Wondery. If you'd like to hear more of Business Wars and other Wondery shows, in addition to extra content, early access, and exclusive perks, you can subscribe to Wondery Plus. Go to Wondery.com/plus. That's P-L-U-S. We'll see you there.